For our last panel today, we're going to do a little bit more of a conversation format. We have Lisa Engel with the Assembly Committee on Housing and Community Development, and we have executive directors from both CHC and from Housing California. So if you three of you can join me up here at the table, we'll have a nice brief conversation and get you guys out of here in 30 minutes. To start our conversation today with a question for Lisa. Lisa, the legislature adjourned at 3 a.m. ish on Friday night, so Saturday morning at 3 a.m. After a week of really hard work. And so could you give us a sense of kind of where we ended up this year, what kinds of housing issues came out of that last week particularly. We've already talked about the cap and trade funds and Prop 41 funds. What did you see on Saturday night, Friday night?
Well, there were a lot of outgoing members, so we spent a lot of time talking about them, which was really fun for all of us. No, it was great. It was great. So let's see. So there was a gut and amend at the end of session. I'll talk a little bit about that, but I just want to update you briefly on the pilot bill issue. I know you guys are familiar with payment in lieu of taxes agreement, so I won't go into the backstory on that. But as you are aware, we had two bills this year to deal with payment in lieu of taxes agreements. And both bills were trying to solve the problem in a slightly different ways. But what essentially we ended up doing, and we ended up with two different bills that divided up the issue. Both members were very invested, so they each wanted a bill. But what we ended up doing is we banned pilots going forward. We grandfather in existing pilot agreements. We create a conclusive presumption that any payments made under pilots that were entered into prior to January 1st, 2015 are legal. So the assessors essentially cannot challenge your welfare exemption if you have a pilot that you entered into prior to January 1st, 2015. After that, again, no more pilot agreements. And we also refund any penalties or assessments that were collected or essentially sent out as the projects had to pay, even if they hadn't paid it already. But we're refunding any penalties that were collected on projects, and that really would only apply to Ventura County, as far as I'm aware, unless you guys know of any assessors that tried to collect on pilots. So hopefully this solves the problem. We feel reasonably confident that the governor is going to sign the bill. We ended up with the league in going neutral on the bill. There is one city, the city of San Marcos, that is opposed. I think ultimately, officially, they only opposed SB 1203, which was the Jackson bill. And their issue was they have an ordinance. They have a voter-approved ordinance that requires all projects, whether affordable or not, to pay for services. They wanted us to give them an extension. We decided not to. So hopefully, I feel pretty confident that that city is not going to, you know, tip the scales to a veto, but because the league did go neutral on the bill. So we'll have to wait and see, and hopefully, again, this fixes the problem. The other bill, again, the gut and amend I talked about at the end of session was SB 628. This was dropped, language that the governor dropped about a week before the end of session, and it is to create an enhanced infrastructure finance district. For the last couple years, there's been a lot of discussion ever since we got rid of redevelopment agencies to try and replace them with something on a scaled-down basis that would not take the school share but would just be an opt-in for the other taxing entities. The governor, up until last week, he proposed his own budget plan or proposal, but that did not get any sort of traction at the time with the legislature. So again, this would be, if he signs it, and I assume he will, a much smaller version of tax increment financing. There are a couple elements that were raised at the end of session by some of the housing folks that they had concerns about. There are replacement requirements. If you remove housing within a district, and you'd have to replace it with affordable housing, but there's no, it's a low or moderate income. There's no sort of requirement to replace at units at the rate that they were removed. So that's one issue that came up. There was also concerns that there was no production requirement for new affordable housing, and there's no set aside. So I know this kind of got those concerns raised, you know, some opposition to the bill at the end of session. I think the indications that leadership got, at least on some of those issues, particularly a set aside, is the governor wouldn't sign the bill if it had a set aside. So, but I do think there's some interest, from my sense at least, in addressing the replacement requirements next year. So that could be done through a bill at the beginning of the year. My sense is this isn't the end of a replacement for redevelopment, or this is certainly not seen as a solution for funding affordable housing. So I think there's a lot of room next year to still do hopefully a lot in that area.
I have a follow-up question, sorry. how does SB 628 kind of dovetail with the other IFD bills that were passed? There was the Alejo bill, and I think there was also another Wolk bill that passed. I know they're all different. So how do they dovetail together?
Okay. So you can use 628, the Enhanced Infrastructure Financing Districts for Transit-Oriented Development. That was the original Bell bill. You can use it for a variety of infrastructure investments. You can use the tax increment for projects that meet your SB 375 goals. Now, the other IFD bills did not have a vote requirement, and 628 does require, if you're going to issue bonds, to go to the voters within the district, and it's a 55% threshold, which is slightly better than what it was before, which was two-thirds. But it's very similar. A lot of the structure is the same, the public reporting, the public hearing requirements and things like that. But I think the vote is significantly different. That was something that the governor indicated early on he was not going to budge on. But I would say the purposes are similar. I think some of the bills, several of the IFD bills, did have a set-aside for affordable housing. I think it was the SBs more than the ABs, but that would be a difference as well.
So it'll be interesting to see which the governor will sign besides his own.
Right. I don't think he'll – I'm sorry. The question also is he going to sign any of the other IFD bills? I don't think he will. He'll sign his own because there's enough of an overlap, and there's enough – like, as I said, the vote requirement is only in 628. So I think that's probably – that's his proposal. That's what he'll sign. I'm not even sure if we sent him the other bills.
They were enrolled.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, to Ray and Seamus, I know both of our organizations have been working really hard the past 3 years actively on a permanent source of funding for affordable housing. We had SB 391 this year that was really characterized by our California Homes and Jobs campaign. What are your thoughts kind of on the momentum that we've built off of that bill and that campaign, and your thoughts on whether we'd be introducing a similar bill come December?
Thank you, Marina. I think the theme of today has been we are so thankful to be able to sit here and talk about new programs and new funding and new opportunities. And it isn't just lamenting the woe is me, we haven't achieved any of our main objectives in the legislature. And I think there are so many reasons to be thankful and a lot of cautions ahead. I think the key thing on our SB 391 coalition is for the first time in a very, very long time, you heard folks talk earlier about speaking with one voice. Matt Schwartz mentioned that And I think for the first time you had key legislative staff with people like Lisa and Mark Stivers on the Senate side. You had the head of CHC and Housing California, NPH, the San Diego Housing Federation, SCAMF. All of those organizations and those boards focused on a key piece of legislation, and that was SB 391. Beyond that, and more importantly almost than that one voice, is that we built a coalition that had over 700 members by the time the bill made it out of the Senate and on to the Assembly. And those 700 members are not only the affordable housing community, but everything from environmentalists to labor, to the chamber, to the Building Industry Association, the Orange County Business Council, and the list goes on. And I think as Seamus and I look ahead to next year, we want to build on the successes and understand that the victories that we did have this year weren't an accident. We sort of made our own luck, and a lot of that started with SB 391. And there were a lot of other things going on, the Sustainable for All Coalition that Seamus helped lead, some very timely research that was done on cap and trade, and the fact that we have this wonderful new speaker in Tony Atkins sure didn't hurt. But as we go forward, Marina asked the question, do we think we'll introduce another bill like SB 391? I think if you continue to do the same thing over and over and expect different results, then sort of shame on us. And so to reintroduce SB 391, which was exactly the same as SB 1220, and if you go back even further, was essentially the same as Steinberg's SB 500 years ago, and to know that the realtors will continue to oppose us, I think we'd be very silly to do that again. However, I don't want to just put all the blame on the realtors. And that what happened with SB 391 is we did need the two-thirds requirement, and as Maureen Higgins, CHC's lobbyist, continues to remind me and Marina and our board, this was also a moderate slash rural Democrat problem as well as it was a Republican problem. And since we could never cobble together that two-thirds as we go forward, I can tell you we're not going to give up. I don't know what a new permanent source bill might look like, but I can tell you we do need to broaden that support. And Caleb mentioned, and Jonathan Klein mentioned, how do we build our clout and build our support? And it's not necessarily that people in the legislature should fear us, but we certainly need to continue to be heard. And I think building on what we've done with SB 391 is going to be critical as we look at 2015 and beyond.
So following up on Ray, if you look at what a lot of it has been talked about today between the Veterans Housing Bond, between cap and trade, and between what we've got in MHP, certainly the MHP piece and the cap and trade piece, we wouldn't have seen those kinds of dollars if it wasn't for the Homes and Jobs Act campaign. You know, I think those of you that are CHC members ought to be really happy with the leadership that Ray has provided. I don't think without that leadership, you'd be seeing the same kind of money. We wouldn't be spending as much time talking about the regulatory phase as we are, which is a great place to be. I'm working more on regulatory issues than I ever thought I would. We have, in the most part of Housing California, stuck to the legislative side, but there is just a ton of work, partially because of how complicated this is and that we're moving into this phase of working on things that really aren't, they're not housing in the same way. They are, you know, they're a little bit climate change, you know, a little bit services, and that's just a complicated thing to try and figure out, and I think that we're all doing our best to make sure that by the time it comes down to apply as part of that NOFA, from the standpoint of developers, it looks a little bit more like housing development and makes a little bit more sense to everyone. You don't have to learn everything that there is to know about the Strategic Growth Council. Only we do. And I think as we sort of move out of that and we spend, you know, a chunk of the fall working on that piece, I think what we have is a pretty tremendous opportunity in the coming years, especially in the next 2 years, with Tony Atkins as the Speaker of the Assembly, and also with the number of champions within both of those houses that we've developed over the last really 3 years of talking to them about how important housing is as a solution to many other social problems, and talking to them really about what the need is out there in California. And there have been so many of you who've been working at the district level, who've been lobbying in the Capitol, you know, who've been paying your dues to the respective housing organizations. And that has paid off, and I think it's going to continue to pay off for the next couple of years. Exactly what those end results look like, I'm not exactly sure. But if I were a gambling man, I'd put some money on there being more money for us in the coming 2 years. We're going to need to protect the money that we got in MHP in the budget. That's going to be critical, and we're going to need to build on that. And I think we also need to acknowledge that the sources that we did get this year don't work everywhere. You know, they're complicated. They're targeted towards fairly specific either populations or public policy goals, and that there are things that we know need to get done that still don't have any state money attached to it. So I think that's going to be one of the priorities in the coming couple of years.
I want to harken back to your comments about MHP and the money we got in the budget back in June. Are there, you know, that kind of came as a surprise to us. All of a sudden, the Assembly budget had this $200 million proposed allocation to MHP. Are there any other state programs, and maybe this is a question for Lisa or for both of you gentlemen, are there state programs that we haven't looked at that are currently existing that we could start funding again? I know, you know, Caleb suggested putting an additional $200 million into the state tax credit program, but are there any other housing production programs that we've sort of overlooked?
I think enhancing the tax credit program is a possibility. I think there were several tax credits that got through in the last month or so benefiting various parties. So I think tax credits are definitely viewed differently. So there's still a cost to the general fund, but for some reason they're more palatable. So that is an option. That's something that was discussed last, as I recall, as part of the conversation once SB 391 didn't seem viable as an option. So I think that would be worth starting early conversations about. There's also a possibility, I guess, of more general fund. I mean, everyone, I think, was surprised that the Assembly was able to pull that off. So I think there's the possibility of doing more next year. There was also some money in CalWORKs for homelessness that was, I think, about $20 million that ended up in the budget, which was significant, too. I will throw this out there, although I haven't fully thought about it yet. I wonder if it's worth, I know it's not a permanent source, but thinking about another bond. There's going to be a school bond. Maybe there's a way to package it as part of an infrastructure bond. Not the perfect solution, but, you know, something to maybe think about and explore. I haven't thought through, you know, what else would be on the ballot and how that would be viewed. But obviously, identifying a permanent source is the ideal option. But
so I'll pick up on what Lisa said with a bond, and I know it is something that we have talked about at the CHC board as sort of our last resort. The idea behind the permanent source has always been to try to stop worrying election cycle to election cycle how we're going to fund housing. But as we face the political realities, even the housing bond becomes, and this is me channeling Maureen Higgins, but she and we feel that it has the potential to be very challenging, yet still worth exploring. And why challenging? On one hand, you have Governor Brown, who I assume will be reelected, and he will be our leader for another 4 years. And if you look at what just happened, I'm intrigued by the tax credit idea, because you had, especially in Los Angeles, people like Assemblymember Scott Wilk, a Republican from Santa Clarita, really championing the film tax credit, and they wanted $400 million. They got $300, $320 million, and it had huge bipartisan support when that went through. Yes, it does have an impact to the general fund, but at least there's a conversation and a dialogue to happen that is not happening over, quote-unquote, taxing the realtors. As far as a school bond goes, you look at the water bond that will be on the ballot that, granted, it had a whole lot of pork and went from $11 billion to the governor wanting $6 billion and settling at $7 billion. And then the school bond, that's not happening as hard as the builders pushed it into something that has happened year after year after year. It's just the governor's showing a lack of desire for increased debt. But I do think as you look to those long-term solutions, I go back to the great leadership that we have right now in the housing world, from assembly housing leadership to Senate housing leadership. I know we're losing Senator DeSaulnier, but we all lamented losing Senator Lowenthal when he went off to Congress, and look how great Senator DeSaulnier was for us. And then it comes back to Speaker Atkins, and she's got 2 years in that role, and I know that when you look to signals from a speaker, you hope that the word housing would be mentioned. And I think she created the surprise over MHP just by the force of nature that she is. And I think that we in the affordable housing industry should really be here to help her create whatever legacy she's going after. And what we don't want to be doing is looking back on her tenure and saying, wow, that was a missed opportunity. I wish we'd done more. And I know as I talk with Seamus, our board, and staff, and Marina and Maureen, that is something that we're very, very cognizant of, is making use of the fact that we have this speaker that is so amazingly supportive of what we're trying to do.
Just on your original question, Marina, the one thing I would say is, you know, there's a few other programs. You know, CalHome is much more flexible than MHP and sort of where it can be used. You know, self-help and CERNA are the ones that get a lot of talk among our rural constituency about programs that they really could be funded as part of a budget allocation.
I want to touch briefly and ask, put Lisa a little bit on the spot again. you know, Ray brought up an interesting point. We're losing Senator DeSaulnier in the Senate. So I guess my question is, do you expect that Assemblymember Chow is going to be still interested in chairing the Housing Committee going into the next session? And who do you think is maybe interested in taking on Senate Transportation and Housing?
I definitely think Assemblymember Chow is interested in remaining our chair. I think there will be some changes. There are members that are termed out and others that may not stay on the committee for various reasons. And then as far as I can speculate, Mark would probably be better at speculating than I would on the Senate side, but I think that there might be some interest from Senator Galgiani, but I think that would be really surprising because she's a targeted member, and so I don't see her, you know, being put in that position. I think the leadership would see that as a bad choice. I think maybe Bell might be somebody that's being considered. Again, this is purely speculation. So I think it is a little bit up in the air. I don't know that there's, I mean, I hate to say this, and maybe there is somebody that I'm just not aware of, that there's anybody that's sort of the natural fit that seems to be the housing advocate. But I worked for Alan Lowenthal, and I don't think Alan really had the interest at the beginning, but it developed. And I probably, you know, Senator DeSaulnier had more, but it developed over time, so.
Thanks.
Those are my guesses.
In our last panel, we had some really interesting ideas about tweaks to the programs over at TCAC. Do you think, Lisa, there's an appetite for tweaking those kinds of programs? Is this something that the housing, this is an area that often divides the housing community, for sure. But is it an area that we should start exploring and trying to build some consensus on, because there would be an appetite in the legislature to support those kinds of tweaks?
I think what Tia said was, you know, very right on, that I think what we need to do is focus on production. So I think any tweaks or changes that aid that would be of interest. I didn't get to hear the entire presentation, so I'm not sure specifically what they were or how, you know, if they divide the affordable housing community, you know, what that would actually play out. But I think it's definitely worth the discussion. I think the fact that, you know, we're going to have a new director soon, or executive director, when Bill leaves, that's going to be a significant change. So I think we need to look for every opportunity we can. And so if there's opportunities to make changes to the program that result in more housing, our ability to draw down more federal dollars, whatever, I think we should definitely explore them.
Are there questions from our audience for any of our three panelists? Caleb.
If the pilot bills were to be vetoed,
So the question was, if the pilot bills are vetoed, is that it for them?
We could try for an override. I think there were some Republican no votes on those bills. I'm not sure what the numbers are, so we'd have to look into that. So it is an option. But I feel reasonably confident that we're going to be okay. The fact that the leak is neutral on the bill, I think, is a good sign. We had some early conversations with the governor's office about their concerns, and it seemed to be really focused on what would happen with existing pilot agreements. And since we've grandfathered them in, I feel confident that they're going to be okay with it.
Any other questions? Well, great. With that, I want to thank Lisa, Ray, and Seamus for coming up here. I want to thank all of you for sticking around and spending the afternoon with us and getting into some of the weeds about what's going on with housing in the coming year. And special thanks to Union Bank, our sponsors today. Any final comments, Ray?
Thank you all very much. We appreciate the opportunity to talk about these issues. And like I said earlier, it's really great that we do have some good things to talk about. As Seamus said, we are spending far more time in the regulatory weeds than we ever imagined we would. But I know both Housing California and CHC can walk and chew gum at the same time. And not only will we spend that time on the regulatory front, but we'll make sure that we continue, both of our organizations, to work hard on your behalf in the legislature next year. So thank you all very much for being here today.